Throughout history, freethinkers have outraged the religious with their wacky ideas about the virtues of free speech, reason, and of course, eating babies. Now, God is dying, and it's time to dispose of his remains. From the pits of hell, Satan sends two puppets of the imperialist West and the Zionist Jews against God, Islam, and tiny kittens to bring you their propaganda and conspire for a new world order. This is Secular Jihadists for a Muslim Enlightenment with Ali Rizvi and Armin Navabi.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Secular Jihadists for a Muslim Enlightenment. See, I talk today like this. And with me, the guy is Armin. He's eating something. What are you eating? What are you eating?
Apple.
What are you eating? He's eating apple. An apple. Yeah, that's apple. Good. That's good for you. Today this is like something I've been planning for a while. I saw this video of these two Islamic scholars. Yasser Qadhi is one of the best known Islamic scholars in the Western world, like in the US. And then Zakir Naik, who many of you know, is the Indian guy. He's also an Islamic scholar, and he's a lecturer, travels all over the world. There's two very, very high profile Islamic scholars and preachers who had a conversation together, right? That was very, very popular among, you know, the Muslim crowd. And they were talking about, they actually discussed the threat of atheism and agnosticism, young Muslims leaving Islam and taking up becoming atheists and agnostics. And we thought, and they started discussing how to get people back into the fold of Islam, these young people leaving. So some of that conversation was really interesting. And I don't think, Armin, you haven't heard it yet, have you? Have you heard this stuff?
I think I have, because there was a whole bunch of people who clipped this. There was a lot of both Muslim and ex-Muslim channels, and also Christian, anti-Islamic Christian channels that were cutting this part out. I think if it is the part that I think it is, then I might have already seen it. But it was a very significant part. Like, I don't know if people understand how big of a deal these two people are for different reasons. Like, if the people who are not familiar with the Islamic world, like maybe we should compare the audience like that Zakir Naik has compared to Sam Harris. Like, Zakir Naik's audience is like astronomically higher, for example, than someone like Sam Harris. You know what I mean? Like, these are giants that we're talking about, like when it comes to the Islamic community and the influence that they have, right? So Zakir Naik is like the biggest audience
worldwide.
Worldwide, the biggest audience any Islamic Muslim preacher has. But Dr. Yasser Qadhi, he is, for different reasons, very significant. He is taken seriously by a lot of people because of not just being an Islamic scholar, which doesn't mean anything. He's an actual scholar, right? And that has been a major source of controversy because, like, when you say Islamic scholar, the scholarship that you get is based on Islamic standards. It's all a bunch of crap. And it's just like how much... It's basically the same thing as becoming a scholar in witchcraft or something like that, right? But Dr. Yasser Qadhi is actually a Western educated, I think Yale, an actual academic who has a lot of, research and papers behind his belt, and is taken seriously by non-Islamic scholars. And that gets him, so he doesn't have the audience like that the Zakir Naik has, but he's taken seriously by both Muslim and non-Muslim scholars when it comes to Islamic studies. So he has a different form of legitimacy, but also a lot of controversy because a lot of as people that have the Islamic scholarship, like from Islamic institutions, hate him and are intimidated by him because he's taken seriously, because it seems like the Muslims, for example, that take him seriously are taking Islam, Western education, they're valuing that more than Islamic education. and also because of the things that he says, seems to be, Yasser Gadi himself seems to be saying things that puts Islamic education, belittles it, and they hate that, right? It seems like Yasser Gadi being taken seriously by a lot of Muslims is seen as an inferiority complex, as in Muslims do not take their own scholar seriously, and you need the Westerners to clap for your scholarship until you, Muslims also feel like they are taken seriously and they have any legitimacy, because these Western institutions are telling you that, yes, you are a scholar, and that's the only way that Muslims will appreciate their own work. So that's why they hate Yasser Gadi. Anyway, that was a huge introduction, but go on.
Yeah, no, I got to say, like with Zakir Naik too, a lot of the ex-Muslims that I talked to, like I remember Vidu Vids, you know, when he was here, the comedian, the amazing, like I love Vidu Vids. So he was, and he does an amazing imitation, right, an impression of Zakir Naik. And he talked about how he used to listen to Zakir Naik's lectures a lot. Back when he was religious. So, and if you listen to Zakir Naik, you actually hear it. I mean, aside from the accent, and, you know, he's kind of a comedic sort of character, just his affect is, but the stuff he says and the way that he comes back at arguments is, from that point of view, if you're looking at it from that point of view, it is actually a cut above what Islamic scholars typically do. He does engage in a way that a lot of the others don't. So anyway, let's play this clip.
Well, right. Before, actually, two more things I want to add for people to have some context. That's actually a very important point, because Ali, you are, for a lot of people, if you want to be get an information from a Muslim on why Islam is good and why you should convert to Islam, or why your understanding of Islam is incorrect, from a lot of Muslims, okay, I'm not going to say most, because that's going to be harder to prove. I do believe that, but I'm not going to say claim that here right now. But from a lot of Muslims, you are more likely to get a video from Zakir Naik more than a Quranic verse or something from the Hadith. Like a Muslim sending you a Zakir Naik video to be like, just telling you, I mean, they're supposed, if they were properly doing Musliming properly, right, they would be like, just listen to this verse of the Quran, or just read this chapter of the Quran. That's how you Muslim properly. But it's more likely for them to send you, like, just watch this video of Zakir Naik, okay? That's one thing. And also, another thing that I want to mention is that both Western-educated scholars, Islamic scholars, and traditionally educated Islamic scholars are a bit jealous of these YouTube personalities that are getting such a big audience, for example, like Zakir Naik, and they think that this is harming the Muslim community or the Ummah by listening to people who don't have the actual credentials, Islamic credentials, that are basically talking about things that are not within their expertise, but are taking very seriously and have major audiences. And they like, yes, maybe like if you go listen to an Islamic scholar, he's not going to be as interesting to listen to as Zakir Naik, but that's actually the better information that you could get. One recent example is when Zakir Naik came out and gave out his understanding of what, whether it's haram or not to masturbate. Both, as I don't know if you saw that video, both Yasser Gadi and
I stopped masturbating after watching that video. It was very compelling.
No. Both Yasser Gadi and Zakir Naik think that it's possible for masturbation not to be haram. That it could be makruh, or maybe it's allowed in certain situations, right? Which is a huge departure from traditional Islamic understanding of, no, it's definitely haram. There is no exceptions unless there is a medical necessity for releasing semen or something like that. Other than that, that is absolutely haram, okay? So, and a lot of traditional Muslims are using this as they already know Yasser Gadi is like a modernist, is a reformist. So him saying that it's possible to masturbate and it not being haram, they were like, we already knew he was a lost cause. But for somebody like Zakir Naik to come and say to such a big audience that maybe masturbation is not haram, maybe it's not sinful in certain situations. They're like, this is definite proof that he doesn't know what he's talking about. They came up with the hadith that proves beyond reasonable doubt that is Islamic tradition, that this is completely sinful and it's haram. And a lot of people are like, this is exactly why people shouldn't be listening to da'wah people on YouTube and on the internet and actually go refer to Islamic scholars. Anyways, let's go to...
They want to keep the youth. That's the thing. And I think that's the most important glimpse that you're going to get from this clip that we will play very, very soon. You're going to hear it now. But it's a really interesting glimpse into their thinking, like the way that they're thinking about it. And a lot of it has to do with you could shut down all of these questions, deviant questions coming from young Muslims a while ago and just slap them and tell them to be quiet. But now you have to engage because they're going to go online. They're going to find it from other sources. So they're trying to keep their youth. And I would think if you want to keep your youth, you got to let them jerk off, you know? Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
It's an important part of keeping your youth. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Actually, that's a very good point. That is very, I mean, it sounds funny, but it's very true.
Yeah.
Okay. So
let's do it. Let's play the video.
So this is, you want me to play it from the 41 minute? This is the right part, right? Hold on. I'm going to play it and let me know if you have audio once I start playing it, okay?
Respected. We're facing the rise of agnosticism, the rise of atheism. This is our final question, Dr. Saab. We're facing the rise of agnosticism and atheism amongst some segments of the Muslim ummah, especially here in America. I'd like to speak a little bit about that before we conclude, because I think it's very important that people hear from the both of us. What do we think we should be doing? What advice can we give to the Muslims to make sure that we protect the iman of the next generation and to counter this rise of irreligiosity and agnosticism and atheism?
As far as the rise of atheism rising in the Western country, I disagree with you. It is not only only Western countries, throughout the world.
Yeah, okay, so before I play the rest, this is very, very interesting because it seems like
I crack up when I hear him talk.
That was very interesting because he said, I disagree with you, and people assume that he's going to be like, oh, I disagree with you. Atheism is not rising. It's not on the rise. He's like, no, it is rising. It's rising everywhere.
It's not just in Western countries. It's rising all over the world, in the Gulf countries too. Anyway.
Yes. We're winning, guys. Are you tired of winning yet?
Oh my God! You gotta let the man speak. Let's let him speak.
Okay.
Generation and to counter this rise of irreligiosity and agnosticism and atheism.
As far as the rise of atheism rising in the Western country, I disagree with you. It is not only only Western countries, throughout the world. It is rising everywhere in the world, including Gulf countries. You know, where I considered that, you know, the Gulf countries, especially Saudi Arabia, it is the heart of Tawheed. I was shocked. It was in 2014. They asked me to give a lecture on atheism. Does God exist? I was shocked. In Saudi Arabia, in Jamiatul Imam, where I consider one of the best Islamic universities, to give a talk on atheism. And then I realized that the people told me that even in the Gulf countries, leave aside Western countries, leave aside UK, leave aside America, India, even there are, and previously, according to me, when a person from Saudi Arabia or from the Gulf country went to America or went to Western country, the chances that, you know, they would deviate from the deen would be maybe 1 or 2%, that's it. But nowadays, the chances are more than 25%. Coming back to your question, I know that there is a rise, and I've given a talk on this topic, Does God Exist? Where I've proved with reason, logic, and science the existence of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. What I believe that amongst the people who are in the past, you know, there is a section of the guys who disagree on answering any question, which I don't agree with them. They say, okay, this question, yes, shaitani sawale. This is a devil's question. So this question cannot be asked. You know, so they disagree on answering questions when anyone raises against the Quran. I'm concerned if I find a book which is written against the Quran and a book written in favor of Quran, I will first buy the book written against the Quran to know how are they attacking the Quran. If I don't know how the enemy is attacking the Quran, How, as a Dai, can I defend it? So what we realize that many questions like which our younger generation asks, our older generation used to disagree replying, saying that this will take away from the deal, which I disagree. Number one, we should stop saying do not answer questions which are you know, a Satan's question. I said, no, you can answer any question. Yeah.
Okay, we do need to stop a little bit, Ali, because if we don't...
I wanted him to finish. Like, I didn't say don't stop at all. But
Also, because Yasser Ghadi, it does do copyright strikes on people.
Okay.
He does, like, he's famous. This is on Yasser Ghadi's YouTube channel, and he is famous for doing false copyright strikes, especially on the video that he didn't want to get out, which was the video about the holes in the narrative regards to the variance in the Quran. He went around, he was so desperately trying to take those videos out down that he keep filing false copyright strikes on different YouTube videos. So for the sake of, and because this is from Yasser Ghadi's channel, we need to pause and comment every once in a while to make sure that if he does do a copyright strike on us, it's a false copyright strike, and we could like say that, like, look, we have enough commentary on this for this to be fair use, right?
I actually do think that Zakir Naik, I mean, I like what he said. It sounds similar to kind of what you say. I mean, just sorry, I'm comparing you to Zakir Naik, but this idea if he wants to argue for his case, then first he's going to find all of the arguments against his case. And he actually is quite familiar with the arguments against his case. The way he responds to them is obviously, you know, ridiculous, and we don't agree with that. But he does his due diligence. So I think he's a worthy interlocutor, I think, in that sense. And, you know, what he's saying is actually really important. Yeah, don't shut people down and engage with them. Now, I think the outcome of that, refreshingly, will be much different than, you know, what he's hoping for, I think. But overall, I think the approach is, I mean, the fact that they're waking up to this is a huge thing. It's a huge thing. I never saw this growing up. Never saw a guy like him. I mean, when I was growing up, there was Ahmed Didat, right? We went to Mecca once for Umrah, and we were eating in one of these like little restaurants. Went there for dinner after the Kaaba, like going into the Haram. And we saw Ahmed Didat's family there. And I remember my dad went up and said hi to him. This is in the 80s. I'm a very old man. So, and I used to watch his debates after that. Like, I used to see the way he used to talk, and Zakir Naik has kind of taken the mantle from him. Ahmed Didat kind of used to do these things too, but they were still very, very sensitive about young Muslims. They're Muslim kids asking them these blasphemous questions, and they used to just kind of swat it away. And they are coming to the realization right now that this is just no longer an option.
Okay, so just a few things. I just want to highlight the fact that we are winning this battle of ideas with like us and a whole bunch of other people that are highlighting how ridiculous Islam is with such a small fraction of the resources that the Dawah community has, right? I mean, the money and the resources that they have, both the not just the Wahhabis, the reformists, the modernists, the Shirazi Shias, the Velayat Faqih Shias, they have oil money behind them. Then you have the Turkey spreading their version across Europe with the mosques that they build and the madrasas that they build. And then you have Malaysia spending so much money in trying to whitewash Islam around the world. And you have all these resources and all this money being spent into spreading and marketing Islam. And in response to that, and we're talking about, like, I can't even put a number on how huge the resources and the money is behind this. And then on the other side, yeah, people like, I mean, as big as, for example, channels like Apostate Prophet, David Wood, and, you know, are, and also ex-Muslims of North America, and then we have, you know, smaller channels like us, and we have Reason on Faith, and we have who else do we have? Abdullah Samir, we have Harris Sultan, we have MTM Shams. Like, if you add all of these together, it's like a drop. It's like such a nothing. It's like a drop in an ocean compared to what they're doing. And with all of this information that is being put out there, we are winning. Like, imagine, like, this is only getting started. Like, we're only getting started and actually making, raising some awareness about. I think also we're winning more right now because we have, like, managed to steal this whole anti-Islam platform from the bigots and the far right, because they were like, they were harming this whole movement, right? I think now that we have actually some people that people could take seriously, especially if they're ex-Muslim, I think a lot more people, when they go and try to find the information, they see that the motivations are not anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim. It's easier for that movement to keep growing this way, right? Go on.
Oh, no, I was just going to add in like a little petty, I was going to throw in an I told you so, because I have, like, for the last couple of years, I remember I've been quite an optimist on this. Like, I think that this thing is gaining steam. I always give that example of, you know, Salman Rushdie thing was just like 30 years ago, and look at us now. And I always got a lot of opposition. Like, you know, you're not realizing the threat. I wasn't diminishing it in any way, but this is kind of what I was talking about, that, you know, we're sort of seeing this happen. I don't think the funding matters. I think that when it comes to revolutionary technologies, like, you know, what Mariam Namazi said about the printing press, right? The printing press, it wasn't about, these were people who didn't have a lot of money who came out and changed the world with their ideas. I mean, Mark Zuckerberg was a kid in a Harvard dorm room. You know, Julian Assange was just like a guy in his basement. These people, they just ended up having these massive voices. And it wasn't about the money and how much funding there was. I mean, Julian Assange, right? Like, whatever you think about him, this guy was like in a some basement with an internet connection. He ended up sending like the Secretary of State in the U.S. on a worldwide apology tour because of leaked diplomatic cables. So there's a tremendous amount of power, right? The downfall of all these Middle Eastern dictators. There's a huge power to social media and the internet. And I think that's where the ideas really, really come through. And the they can have all the funding they want. It doesn't matter. Saudi oil money does not matter. Yeah.
Reason on Faith is saying, great point, Armin. I had to highlight this because it started with great point, Armin.
That's great.
We're a ragtag bunch of individual activists with a fraction of the resources of these big Islamic organizations, and we're making a difference.
Katie
saying the far right is indeed a threat to the ex-Muslim movement. Yes, and that's why you shouldn't even flirt with them even a little bit. It basically takes the whole thing down. And by far right, by the way, we also mean Hindutva. Okay, Yasmin Muhammad, if you're watching, stop flirting with the Hindutva. It's going to take that is a threat to the ex-Muslim. Okay.
Yeah. I'm so thankful that they expose themselves. Thankful that they expose themselves because I do think today I feel so much better now, right, than I did maybe about a year ago with all of this. And I right now, it's just, anyway, I think we're on the right track. And I think all the people that you mentioned and many more, you guys are doing just a fantastic job in taking this to the next level. I love it.
Yeah.
And this video we're hearing is proof.
Oh, yeah. Bobo is saying, I think Islamism is rising in India, though Muslim leaders keep telling Muslims to be more Muslim to make their presence felt and fight Hindutva. Hindutva will lead to radicalization. Yeah, this is exactly what we're saying. The far right in India, see, when you don't have far right, we are winning against Islam. Okay, the less far right you have, the greater our wins are against Islam. When you actually have far right, which are anti-Muslim instead of anti-Islam, it actually helps grow Islam, right? So this is why we're not, we might not be winning as much in India when it comes to in Islam, because we don't have, we don't, the fight is against, in India is against Muslims instead of against Islam.
Yeah, I have a different view of that. I have like a, in the short term, I think that's right. Long term, I think that these are backlashes. Like the Hindutva is basically a movement that's trying to hold on to something that is dying. The world is progressing. People are, you know, kind of letting go of these nationalist ideas, these hyper-religious ideas. So there's these fringe movements that become a little bit bigger and they become louder. They end up taking over a lot of the mainstream narrative. They end up taking over the headlines, but they're not taking over the trend lines. The trend lines, even in India, are still heading towards secular progress. No. And the same thing, like a lot of, just one last thing. I think a lot of the Muslims and the Hindus in India are watching these like sort of Muslims and Hindu people go at each other. And many of them are just getting sick of it all, especially the younger generation.
No, I don't. Wait, you don't. Mm-hmm. That's not a disagreement. I actually agree with you with that, because as much as I look at the short term situation in India, and it's, the short term future for India seems very bad, the long term looks really good when you look at the opinions of younger generation, right? So long term, I'm very, very pessimistic about India. Long term, I'm very, very optimistic about India, right? Yeah, but same. Also in the short term, I do think that the whole anti-Islam activism in India is completely been derailed in the short term, at least, because of how much Hindutva is basically. How bigoted and how anti-Muslim Hindutva is, right? So that's what I think. And also, just being anti-Muslim pushes Muslims to be more tribal and use Islam as their identity and try to use Islam as a way to protect themselves. And also, religion as a whole feeds on being victimized, right? Victimization helps religion grow. So there's many different elements that work with that. Katie actually agrees. Maybe Muslims in India are becoming so tribalistic that they are even holding on the ex-Muslims as part of their community. Indian Muslims think of Javed Akhtar as a Muslim.
So Javed Akhtar is a very outspoken atheist who is from a Muslim background. He's a big sort of a writer. He's a poet who writes a lot of the lyrics for the Indian movies and everything. And he recently, actually last year, he got the Richard Dawkins Award. Right, so that was very controversial for a lot of people. They're like, oh, why are you giving the Richard Dawkins Award to a Muslim? Because people think he's a closet jihadist, you know, the whole classic story. But let's go back to that video, because Zakir Naik goes into a prescription for what they should do to bring these Muslims back as well. So I wanted to...
Can I just read two more comments before we go? Our patrons. Katie is saying, many young Muslims hesitate about questioning their religion because of their threat of the far right parties outside their community. Exactly, right? Yeah. Because even if you have curious about maybe your religion is wrong, when you're being dealing with such a huge threat against your community, you feel like you're betraying the Muslims and you're not showing unity and you're not helping the Muslims defend themselves against this giant threat if you question Islam, right? And Bobo also saying, because ex-Muslims will be subjected to the Hindutva bigotry. And yes, exactly. When Hindutva comes for Muslims, they do not differentiate between ex-Muslims and Muslims that much, right?
Anyways, I got to say, this is actually a really important point. This is in The Atlantic. If you guys can look up this article called The Future of Ex-Muslims in Trump's America or something. I mean, this is an interview that I did with The Atlantic where we talked about this exact thing, that it makes the work of ex-Muslims a lot harder when you have the far right on the rise, because they try to hijack the cause and it discredits us and makes it a lot, much, much more harder. People don't want to be associated with it. And I will admit, like I found in the last 4 years, I did have to start talking about these issues in a different way, like in terms of tones and the tone and everything. I had to, I wanted to, and I very purposely change the kind of messaging I was doing. I mean, the content was still the same. The way I had to talk about it consciously had to change, which was very annoying. I'm glad we don't have to do that anymore. Hopefully. Let's go on.
A question can be illogical, fine.
Yeah.
But you cannot say that if it's any question, like someone says, why don't you have pope or anything? If they ask any question, it cannot be a question which cannot be asked. That's a different question, that everyone is not specialized in the field of answering the atheist. So one thing is we should encourage questions, let it be anything under the sun. But everyone is not specialized in replying. Because while if you're not specialized, you may falter and break the principles of Islam while replying. So I know many da'is while replying to the non-Muslim, they go overboard and they go against the principles of the Quran. They go against the verses of the Quran. They go against the hadith unknowingly, unintentionally. So that's a big problem. Number two, there were some du'ats who fully, like science. Science is ultimately science is on top of the world. And they used to speak, oh yes, yes. Many, those same du'ats today, say don't speak about science. So I said, last time you see, why are you going to extreme? Yes, science, we have to respect science. We agree with science. But not everything then you prove scientifically. So I believe that science is a very good tool. There are many guys who say science should not be used, which I disagree with. Science is a very good tool for spreading the deen among the atheists. Because for the atheist today, science and logic is the ultimate, you could say, ultimate yardstick.
Yeah.
So we cannot neglect science. What we should do is that many of the things within the Muslim Ummah, which because of preconceived wrong ideas, we think about science, which is not going against the Quran, it's not going against the Hadith, it's not going against the Sharia, but we have a preconceived idea that this is against Sharia. And when science says something against it, we defend it. Rather, we should look at it that is this what a Sharia says? So if we go to the extent of using logic, science, and reasoning, inshallah, I feel it is not difficult at all to convince the atheist. As far as I'm concerned, alhamdulillah.
Yeah, so let's talk about when you talk about science, I think that's going to be really interesting. But let's talk about the first thing that he was saying is that the first thing that Zakir Naik was saying that is that, well, what he's saying that, you know, people, when kids come up or when anybody comes up or non-Muslims come up and ask these difficult questions about Islam and people reply, they try to reply, they're not necessarily qualified to reply, right? They say that, you know, they have, he's saying that they're not qualified, that you need to go to a scholar, you need to go to somebody who's well-versed in this, because someone's not well-versed, then they're going to reply to that question and they may give you the wrong reply, right? So what's really interesting about this is that on the one hand, he's saying that we need to engage, we need to answer these questions, we shouldn't like swat them away, but at the same time, if they do come up with the questions, they should be answered by someone who has the knowledge of it. Okay, so even though he's saying that this is a problem that needs to be fixed, to me, it feels like a recipe for disaster. It's just not workable. It's not scalable. The vast majority of Muslims who have kids, who have students who are coming up and they're asking them questions about Islam, and they want to defend the religion, and they want to get them back in the fold, they are actually not, the vast majority of people are not well-versed enough to answer these questions. So if he's insisting that we engage with these young people and answer their questions, but at the same time he's saying that they should only be answered by like someone who's learned and has knowledge, this strategy is doomed to fail, which is great, right? Which is great, because it is going to be doomed to fail. I think that that's... Yeah, and already right off the bat, I found that part of it really interesting.
Yeah, here's the thing. It is doomed to fail. However, what will not fail is Zakir Naik and Yasir Ghadi. Because what you have to understand that Islam will keep becoming less and less relevant, right? However, Yasir Ghadi will use the fact that atheists are growing as a way to sell his brand of reformist narrative. Like, he doesn't call it a reformist because that's a taboo word to use, but his brand of Islamic teaching and his courses, right, he will be able to use this as a way, like, guys, look at this. You guys keep saying that the traditional scholars they're losing. We're losing the youth to Islam, using the youth to atheism. People are leaving Islam, right? That's why we need a new method. We need a new strategy. And that's why you have to buy my course. Because instead of all these traditional Islamic scholars who just memorize the hadith and memorize the Quran and memorize the tafsir and just repeat it and all these other so-called scholars who they have no critical thinking skills and don't question anything and have nothing new to offer. Unlike those people, we here and my courses and my institutions, we actually do analyze things in a scholarly way, and we actually come up with new ways of, you know, we actually question the authority. We don't we don't care how big of a name these Islamic scholars are. We look at everything in an analytical way, and we have the answers. We have the answers in a way that modern Muslims, modern youth, will find as a much stronger answer to these atheists and to these people who are challenging their Islam, which is, by the way, this is something that traditional Islamic scholars hate, right? So yes, this is why, and also Zakir Naik also, he's not going to go away because he's also like, you know what? I'm a medical doctor or whatever, right? He is, right? He's like, yes, science, right? This science thing is like, everybody is like, oh, science is against religion and all. That's why we have to use their own weapon against them. And that's where I come in, because I'm a medical doctor, right? So,
yeah.
So, like, neither Yasir Ghadi or Dr. Zakir Naik, like, I don't think, like, atheism growing for them is not a loss to them. To them, this is an amazing opportunity to show why the traditional model is not working and why you need this so-called doctor who's a scientist and this this academic, this scholar who is a genuine scholar who is like a Yale, like is recognized as a scholar by Western academia, why you need these people to combat this rise of atheism. So they are very motivated in highlighting the rise of atheism, both of them.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that obviously there's the self-promotion and, you know, I'm the only one who can, I alone can save you. Remember who else said that? Like, I think that there is that motivation for sure, but I do think that both of these people, especially Zakir Naik, I think he has a general concern about losing the youth to Islam. I think it's a sincere concern. I think he does come from a place of good faith, even if he's wrong. He does want people to, like, there are scholars. There's people like, you know, for example, Mufti Abu Layth, right? Like, he comes up with a really, really cool, different sort of idea of what Islam is. He's a very different kind of person. And that's a kind of thing that can really keep a lot of youth, like a lot of young people really like him. But Zakir Naik is kind of opposed to that. He's like, because a lot of times they answer things, they're not qualified, and they say things that are against the Quran and that are un-Islamic. So he is advocating for his own interpretation. But, you know, this is to expect every young Muslim who has doubts and reads stuff online and goes and asks their parents a question, to expect them all to say, well, I can't give you this answer, I'm not learned enough, you have to go and listen to Zakir Naik and everything. That's just not, it's like when you have to double click or to go like have three or four different clicks to actually end up buying something online or to get to a website, right? I mean, it's not very user-friendly. It's not a user-friendly method to get to things. So, and then the science aspect. Go ahead, Armin. You have something to say? I wanted to say
about
the science aspect too, but
no. I just want to say I wasn't suggesting at all that because but let me just say this.
Yeah,
Zakir Naik, for example, I was very careful about how I word this because I didn't want to suggest that I know that he's happy that atheism is growing, right? Like, if I had to guess, I mean, these people, like, they have to sleep, they have to be able to sleep at night, and they want Islam to grow, so they will, like, be like, no, I'm upset, atheism shouldn't be growing, right? Like, I mean, I can't read these people's minds, but if I had to guess, I would be charitable, and I would be, like, guessing that what they say they're upset about, they're actually upset about, right? They're not, the way I worded was not that he is trying to, like, he is... That he is like secretly like, yes, atheism is growing and now I've become more relevant. No, but I'm just saying that this will benefit them, right? This will benefit them, and they are trying to market themselves as the solution to all of this to these problems mm-hmm. without me suggesting that they're secretly happy about it. They might be, I don't know. Like maybe they're so secretly happy about this that they're not even admitting to themselves that they're secretly happy about this. You know what I mean? Like maybe there's some part of them that just like, oh my, this is my chance. This is our. I mean, not that they need a chance, they're already very big, but this we come. But again, we can't read minds. We're gonna assume the best of intentions, and that they're not frauds or anything like that. That they actually do think that they're gonna make the world a better place by doing what they're doing. Anyways, I just want to make sure I clarify that. When you want to give me another chance again later, I do want to talk about Mufti Abu Layth. But go on.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk. The most interesting thing to me about all of this, and this is because I have a science background, is what he was saying about science. And it's interesting that when you hear them talk about things, it tells you about something else overall in the world, a phenomenon that's happening, and which is what hit me. And I'll explain. So when he said that in the old days, the Islamic scholars used to talk about science a lot. They talked about how, you know, this concept in the Quran, that concept in the Quran is supported by science. They used to use science to support their religious preaching, right? Because they thought the science was on their side. And now it's the opposite, where they're saying, well, science isn't the only answer. You know, you need religion to answer certain questions. You need spirituality to answer certain questions. That tells me the scientific awareness of the public has risen in a big way. Because what happened, their strategy of the past, right, about using science to support religious claims, it doesn't fly anymore, simply for the reason that people are just more scientifically aware. And that in itself is a great thing. There's just thinking about very generally, I was, you know, like when we used to watch even TV shows and movies, and you used to watch The X-Files or all these paranormal shows, there are all these things where mystery shows where the end would be about some sort of like supernatural phenomenon. That stuff has disappeared, like with the exception of a few fun things like Stranger Things. Like all of those things from TV shows have disappeared because people don't buy that either, right? Even supernatural writers like Stephen King have started writing like non-supernatural type novels. There's a general scientific awareness and a general skepticism of these supernatural claims that it just permeated the culture worldwide. And you see signs of it everywhere. And when he talked about that, and how they used to use science before, but now they try to not use science as much, that really hit me. And that's, I think that's also a cause for optimism.
I do want to comment about this whole science thing as well, because it's very interesting how some of these reformers, including Majid Nawaz, what they bring up is the Mu'tazilites as one of their examples. They either go early Islamic history and they go to Mu'tazilites, or they come up with examples like some scientists during the Abbasid era, especially Ibn Sina and Ibn Rushd and all that, all those people, all that gang. But it's very interesting because both the later scholars and even the Mu'tazilites, if you actually notice them being used as an example for why looking at logical reasoning and looking at scientific way of thinking was part of Islamic history from the beginning, they're actually very good examples for my take. Actually, when I eventually do put out my anti-Islamic reform manifesto, one thing I'm going to include in that would be the fact that what happened in both of those examples is these are people who were influenced by Hellenism in both examples, right? These are not the influence that people like Ibn Sina had on thinking scientifically or thinking rationally, or even the Mu'tazilites, is because they were under the influence of sources outside of Islam. It wasn't because of Islam that they became that they were becoming more rational and more scientific. There was nothing in Islam that was just everything about their insistence on not relying on revelation, not relying on faith, was under them being influenced under Greek philosophers, right? And the impact that they had on them, right? And one thing I also want to mention about Mufti Abu Layth you mentioned is we should actually do another stream about this whole masturbation controversy between all of these, because Mufti Abu Layth also highlighted the fact that both Zakir Naik and Yasir Ghadi are now saying that apparently masturbation is not always haram, and Mufti Abu Layth is even a crazy, like in the eyes of Islamic traditionalists, he's even more of a heretic than any of these two, right? Because he's even like trying to question hadith, right? So as even whether or not you can even trust any of the hadith. So for Mufti Abu Layth, for a lot of these people, it's a complete heretic, right? So as much of a reformist Yasir Ghadi seems to some traditionalists, to Mufti Abu Layth, Yasir Ghadi seems like a traditionalist, right? And he was trying to expose both Zakir Naik and Yasir Ghadi by saying, like, wait, so you guys are saying masturbation is okay now, it's not haram now, where are you guys getting this from? Like, so are you guys are all saying, like, he was trying to show how wishy-washy relying on hadith as a whole is, because his motivation is to throw away the hadith. So you guys are saying, like, you guys are basically saying that the Muslim community, the ummah, has got it wrong for the past 1400 years. I mean, if you want to throw that out, because there's you have no examples of any scholar for 1400 years saying what you guys are saying. Like, basically, if that is possible for masturbation to be haram and sinful for 1400 years, and according to every single Islamic scholars, and all of a sudden you two are coming out and saying that asking is not haram, then you're doing what I'm doing. You're throwing away, like, why stop at masturbation? Why are you not throwing away the entire, like, then what can we trust in the Islamic tradition on something that so unanimously Islamic scholars were on the same side? If you're throwing that away, then come join me. Come join Mufti Abu Layth, because then where's the Islamic tradition? Right, where's the reliability of the hadith? And he actually even asked them on his YouTube channel. He asked them, did you guys got like a revelation from God? Like, are you guys get a vahy or something? What makes you on the right side compared to all the other the ijma, the whole, like, are you guys mujtahids? Like, which is this conflict is actually very interesting, and it's only starting, right? This is, as Yasir Ghadi mentioned, this is the holes in the narratives. These holes in the narratives are going to end up becoming more than holes, because the holes are going to become bigger than the entire Islamic fiqh.
But anyway. I, as much as I love this conversation about masturbation and holes, I just have to say that I got no predicate for that sentence, but I agree. I would love to actually talk to Mufti Abu Layth. I'll write to him again. I'm going to keep on harassing him, because I've talked to him and he did agree at one point to come on the show. So at some point he will, because I'm going to persist and make it happen. But Susanna saying, I still can't get over how Mufti Abu Layth follows me on Instagram. He's a great guy.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. That's amazing. Our own Susanna is being followed by Mufti Abu Layth on Instagram. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's a great amazing guy.
Yeah.
So let's go back to it. I also want to hear a little bit of what Yasir Ghadi says on this before we sign off.
Can we actually read what Bobo is saying as well?
Yeah, Bobo is saying maybe he wants your Quran feet pictures, Susanna. I don't know what this is about, but I really want to know. I really want to know the Quran feet pictures.
Yes. Susanna has been getting a lot of requests because she's been making out with the Quran and molesting the Quran, and she's getting a lot of requests by Muslims with her feet on the Quran. So But not by ex-Muslims, by actual Muslims. A lot of Muslims want her feet with next to the Quran. And Bulbul is suggesting that maybe that's what Mufti Abulayth wants as well. Anyway,
I haven't been following Susanna as closely as I guess everybody else has, but that's amazing.
Blasphemy is a king for a lot of people, I'm telling you. It's a real thing.
Yeah, totally.
But anyway, let's continue.
Let's hear what Yasir Qadhi Sahab has to say.
I've spoken to hundreds and thousands of atheists, mashallah. And if we stick to
still Zakir Naik.
The Sharia is ultimate, alhamdulillah. Use reason and logic. And how can we convince them? So in my lecture, does God exist? In one section, I've used Quran and science to prove the existence of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. In the other section, I've used logic. And third section, what will happen if Allah is not there? If God is not there? So using all these logic, I feel if an unbiased non-Muslim hears this lecture or the convincing reply, I feel if he's open-minded and unbiased, he has to come to the truth of Islam.
So, Zakallah Khair, adding to this as well, I just want all of these points are great. I wanted to add some points as well that I think one of the things that Dr. Saab said is very true, and that is that when our young come to us, when our youth come to us with deep questions, a lot of times we just shut them off. A lot of times we don't allow them to even verbalize those questions. That is a mistake, especially in the current climate that we live in. Now, if you are not qualified to answer, go to somebody who is qualified to answer. But if your son or daughter comes to you and asks a very difficult question, maybe if you were a child and asked it, maybe your mother, father would have smacked you or said, "Be quiet, how dare you?" Okay, we cannot do that anymore. Because if you don't answer, somebody else is going to answer an incorrect way. So take your son or daughter to somebody who can answer. Also, adding to this as well is that agnosticism and atheism is also a spiritual disease. It's not just, as Dr. Saab said, very valid point, logic and reason. Also, there is a spiritual element. And therefore, as you respond to these questions, perhaps...
You're muted, Armin. You're muted.
So I have to pause this here. Sorry.
Yeah. No, it's great.
I mean, we do say that. First of all, actually, no, you don't have to imagine it because I do say it. Islam is not a spiritual disease. It is a disease, okay? But we get so much crap for when I say Islam, Hinduism, Christian, I don't say it's a mental illness because that you need to be a professional to be able to say what's a mental illness. But I can't say it's a disease. I can't say it's a virus. I can't say it's cancer, which is all of that. But I get so much crap for saying that, right? Like I get like I'm nobody compared to these people. I'm nobody compared to these people, and yet they have such giant audiences, and they say atheism is like a spiritual disease, and you know nobody thinks like, hey, like this is you guys are being hateful towards atheists. Nobody responds like that. I mean, I wouldn't even respond like that because I think it's okay for you to attack an idea because he said atheism. He didn't say atheists. He said, so I think that's totally fine for you to say something like that. But I just wanted to highlight the double standard here. Do you guys think there will be ever a backlash against Yasir Qadhi for saying that atheism is a disease? The same way that we get a backlash, even though we're like nobody, how many people come after us when we say Islam is a disease? Like, just wanted to highlight that. Because, again, this is one thing I'm very sensitive about because my main activism is, fighting religion is secondary to me than protecting atheists, right?
Yeah.
So that's why this triggers me a lot. But, yeah,
go ahead. I'd also like to, at this point out, like, this is a really... whenever they talk about this, just reminds me of this verse in Surah 8, verses 55 and 56. It says, quote, "Indeed, the worst of living creatures in the sight of Allah are those who have disbelieved, and they will not ever believe. The worst with the ones with whom you have made a treaty, but then they break their pledge every time. They do not fear Allah." So it actually calls anybody who doesn't believe in Allah the worst of all living creatures. Now imagine if there was a book that said, for instance, quote, the worst of living creatures, in our view, are the followers of Allah, those who believe in Islam, the Muslims. They're the ones you make treaties with, but they break those treaties every time because they have no fear of the law. Imagine if that was a thing. If you take any of these verses in the Quran about disbelievers and you just change them, if the Quran said what it does about disbelievers, if there was any book that said the same thing about Muslims, then heads would roll. Larry, and that's exactly what's happening here. I mean, he's talking about spiritual disease, but I'm not offended at it.
Yeah, go ahead. Just to be clear to YouTube, because I did say Islam is a disease and stuff. If we do ever get a strike, I'm talking about the ideas. I'm not talking about the people. I think the Muslims are the victim of Islam. I disagree with Islam, and that's why I compare it to a disease. But that means that I also always say that the best way to fight Islam is to befriend Muslims. This is an anti-ideology. There's no way that I'm promoting any form of hate or any form of discrimination against an entire group of people, which are Muslims. Okay.
Yeah.
I know. I just want to put that on the record if this video ever gets a strike.
Yeah. So let's hear what the rest of what he has to say about the. I know we just have a couple of minutes, but let's. It's almost, I think, done. We'll just go with one more point.
You emphasize the spirituality that is needed to be a good, holistic human being. Because science and reason only take you so far, the human soul also needs some ibadah, some ta'alluq with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And science can never give you that purpose in life. Science and rationality can never give you the spiritual feeling of happiness that comes when you worship Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The fitrah that Allah created us upon, it needs as well some spirituality. So in tackling these issues of agnosticism and atheism, we have multi-pronged approaches. We take science and rationality, we take logic and reason, we obviously take the Quran and Sunnah, and we also bring in the element of spirituality. And inshallah, those that are sincere, and that's the big if they are sincere, then inshallah they will definitely come back to the faith, because you cannot be an atheist if you're fully logical and rational, and also if you understand the needs of the soul. The atheist is somebody who is insisting on that which he cannot insist on, reason and logic, and the atheist as well is insisting on covering the needs of his or her own soul. Their soul is crying for some meaning, for some life, for some purpose, for some ibadah. And the atheist is insisting, no, I'm not going to answer to what is needed. And that is why the term kufr actually means to cover up, because the atheist has in fact forced the covering on his or her own.
Okay, okay, you got to stop this. This guy's obviously a lot dumber than Zakir Naik. Okay, so Yasir Qadhi is completely, like this idea of that they need the spirituality. This is exactly the wrong approach, because there are millions of people across Scandinavian countries, across like other sort of progressive countries that where religiosity is down, and they tend to have low crime rates. They don't tend to be spiritually deficient. They tend to have like high moral character. They tend to have like a good, ethical, just society. They tend to have all of those things. And we have all seen, they tend to be charitable. We've all seen that this is all very, 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 very possible and likely in non-religious societies. So this idea that, you know, these people who don't have that, they're never going to be happy, they're never going to be satisfied, all human beings need this, is BS. And everybody knows that. So his approach, as opposed to Zakir Naik, at least is making some sense on a logical level. And when you talk about, he's thought about this. Yasir Qadhi, I don't think he has really read any of the arguments to counter his case. I think he's just kind of riffing there.
Yasir Qadhi reads a lot. He just reads about Islamic history and stuff like that. Well, I was only like 4 seconds away from finishing this, so you stopped. Like, hold on, let me just go. Yeah, like, if you gave 4 more seconds, it would have been done.
Okay. Means to cover up, no, because the atheist has in fact forced the covering on his or her own soul, and that's why it's important that we deal with this in a holistic manner. Dark Sub, mashallah, we
spent. Okay, that was it. Okay, that was it.
Yeah, I would have loved to hear what Zakir Naik's response to that was, because I think that I don't want to speak for him. You might have completely agreed, but I just think that he didn't mention that. Zakir Naik, when he talked about his prescription, he was talking about engaging more, answering questions, how to bring in science, talking about how science may be one of the ways to the truth, but it's not the entire way, which is not that much different from what Stephen Jay Gould said with the non-overlapping magisteria, the NOMA thing, that science and religion occupy different spheres. A lot of scientists have said that. That does resonate. at least that is an approach that has some coherence. But this idea that, you know, people, when they're spiritually deficient, they're going to be like these headless chickens or just running around everywhere and they don't know what to do. That is just objectively, anybody who has seen this, they knows that that's not true. I just think it's a failing strategy.
This entire thing was like Yasir Ghadi promoting his courses and getting Zaki Naik to tell people why. Like this is very smart, by the way. Like this is because you have Zaki Naik coming and telling. No, it's very smart. It's genius, right? You had on your channel. You brought the world's biggest Islamic preacher to tell you what the crisis is, and now you got confirmation from such a guess of what the crisis is. And then he finishes that conversation by saying, this is how we're going to respond to it. And by the way, check out my course, right? So, I mean, it's fantastic. It's amazing.
He's setting up an unmet need. He's setting up, it's like the classic sort of branding marketing thing. He's setting up an unmet need, an impending disaster, and then saying, I have the solution for it. I can fix it. I alone can fix it, which was so it's I understand what they're doing. It's just I'm very encouraged by this. I think it's great. I think it's fantastic that they're bringing this up. Like we've been talking about the rise of atheism and how it's a threat and how there's evidence of it all around. The fact that there are conversations like this happening. This isn't the only one. I'm actually very curious. I would love to. I haven't seen it yet, but Zakir Naik's "Does God Exist?" Lecture. That would be great to kind of go through and also dissect. That he's done, because I don't think we've done that before. I haven't seen it. Have you seen it, Armin?
No, maybe. I don't know. I have to see which one you're referring to. I've watched.
Anyway.
Zaki Naik is sometimes hard for me to understand because of his accent. I'm not being racist. It's just hard for me to understand. So, I don't know. Sometimes I'm listening to it and everybody is like, you have watched it with ex-Muslims and they laugh and I'm like, I don't understand. Can you give me subtitles? I have to admit something. We do this half of the time. Everyone's laughing. I'm half the time like, I don't know what he's saying. Maybe you guys, it's because you guys have the same accent. You guys come from the Urdu, the Pakistan, India background. So when Viduvid does his accent, you guys understand him better than I do. So I like half of the jokes goes right above my head because I don't understand what's happening.
Okay, that's interesting. I thought that a lot of people find Indian and Pakistani accents funny. I mean, they're objectively
funnier
than say like an Italian accent, right?
So. Okay, let me admit this. Okay, when Viduvid does his Zaki Naik impression, right? I'm laughing just because how it sounds, not because I understand what he's saying.
That's the whole point.
I'm just laughing because he just sounds funny, but I have no idea half of the time what he's saying. Okay. I just don't know.
You have permission to laugh at, okay. I know you're from a colonialist history and everything, but still. It's all good.
Yes, actually, that is true. The Persian Empire did really screw up anyways. Okay, so and just like we need to go, but I do have to read the last comments. Andre is saying it strikes me that they are scoring a home goal by even engaging in this discussion. Wonderful. P.S. Thanks, guys, for the excellent and very important work you're doing. Thank you, Andre. And also, I must say, this was a very good episode. I know this is like self-congratulatory or anything, but we did amazing, Ellie. This was like a very good coverage of this. I don't care if you disagree. This was a fantastic. Wait,
Suzanne, what is Suzanne saying? She's saying Italian accents are pretty funny too. Yeah, they are funny, but they're also very musical and sexy because everything ends with a vowel. Like if you want to say bastard in Italian, you say bastardo. It sounds beautiful and musical. Everything ends with a vowel, right? There is something really hot and sexy about it. That doesn't happen with Indian accents and Pakistani accents and say Chinese accents. I know this is racist of me, but I'm an Indian Pakistani guy and I know I can talk like this all I want. So it's just not as other advantages, but so.
Alex, you want to read
Alex? Alex is saying, Ali, I think you're confusing a society of peaceful, prosperous people with a society of happy people. So
not true. There are actually these societies, happiness metrics are also very
happiness good. Index. They're also up. But listen, we tend to parse these details, but come on. I mean, the happiness index does look at peace. It looks at prosperity. It looks at, you know, sense of security that people have. These things are directly correlated with happiness. So this is kind of, I think we're parsing way too many details. Oh, Susanna said, just hearing Ali say bastardo made me giggle. Only giggle? Oh, God, what am I doing? Anyway, Katie saying Zakir Naik's accent is hard for some Indians to understand as well from what I have seen. Okay, yeah, I mean, he also has a...
I'm not being racist then.
I got to say, I admire Zakir Naik because, I mean, not only does he have that accent that's like just absolutely fucking hilarious, but on top of that, he also has a lisp. And both of those things together, yet he has been so successful and so massive. That's actually a testament. He's also funny looking.
Impressive. He looks like
he's part of the Looney Tunes thing, right? He could be a character on Looney Tunes cartoons.
I'm actually impressed by Zakir Naik because his looks and the way he sounds, the odds should have been against them. And yet he managed to
become.
So hats off to you, Zakir Naik. I wish you were spreading poison, but you did it. You're
this other sort of diminutive guy with a really funny sort of mustache in the middle of his face, and he had his hair like a constant comb over, but he also ended up doing pretty well.
Yeah.
Sometimes we're not going to go there. All right, everybody. All right. Okay. Thank you for joining us. Love you all. This was a really, really fun thing. And we should do more of these. I love watching these like mullahs talk about the rise of atheism. So
yeah, let's do more of this. Fun.
Yeah.
We should do Shia drama some next time.
We should do. And please, can I just tell everybody this, that if you are listening to this on audio, you can become a patron of this. If you like what we do, when you're a patron, you can actually see these videos live. You can comment, you can ask questions, and you can become a patron for as little as $1 a month. Okay, on patreon.com/SJME. Let's go there and sign up. If you can't become a patron, that's absolutely fine. Share the content. Go to iTunes and give us a good rating. And hit the subscribe button. Smash that subscribe button, as they say. I'm learning how to be a millennial. And hit the bell so you get notifications. And be best, everybody. Be best.
You're not going to let that go, huh? Be best.
Yes. I can't. This is the best thing ever.
Yeah, be best by becoming a patron so you could be in the live chat with us when we're doing this episode. Yeah. Okay?
It's not be the best. It's not be better. It's just be best. It's beautiful.
But I want to promise you guys that we're going to do a Shia drama episode as well because Susanna has done a lot of digging on this whole Shia and Shia drama, and she now knows more about this more than I do, which is amazing. Anyway, so we could do an episode on that.
And I'll sing a Noha can we do that live. Yeah, I'll do that with the Shia episode in honor of Imam Hussein's sacrifice.
Good. All right. See you guys later. Be best.
The secular jihadists have been made possible thanks to the Illuminati and the covert support of Israel and the CIA. That's what we have been told, but we haven't received our checks yet. If you like what we do, please support us. Share the podcast with your friends. Write and tweet us with topic and guest suggestions. Or head over to secularjihadist.com and give $1 or more for exclusive access to live video. Have your questions read and answered on the air and more. Till next time, may the flying spaghetti monster be with you.